This is the same JC-201 unpracticed, unfamiliar test that I dictated at 200 words per minute, only now we're going to do it at a steady 225. If you want to challenge it even faster, bump it up, say, 10%, and it'll be about 250 words per minute. Once again, treat it seriously, no pausing or stopping in between. I say, let's begin. As the judges of the facts, you are the sole judges of the credibility of the witnesses. You have seen and heard each of the witnesses as they have given their testimony. You will assess their credibility and truthfulness in light of your own experience with people. You may believe everything a witness said or nothing of what the witness said. You may believe part of what a witness said and reject other parts of what the witness said. Merely because evidence has not been denied does not mean that you are obliged to accept it as true. When you go to the jury room to consider the case, use the same common sense that you use every day in deciding whether people know what they are talking about and whether they are telling the truth. There is no magic formula for deciding how much or how little to believe of a witness's testimony or how much to rely on it in deciding this case. But here are a few questions you should keep in mind during your discussions. Did the witness seem honest? Is there any reason why the witness would not be telling the truth? Did the witness have an interest in the outcome of the case or any reason to give evidence that is more favorable to one side than to the other? Did the witness seem able to make accurate and complete observations about the event? Did he or she have a good opportunity to do so? What were the circumstances in which the observation was made? What was the condition of the witness? Was the event itself unusual or routine? Did the witness seem to have a good memory? Does the witness have any reason to remember the things about which he or she testified? Did any inability or difficulty that the witness had in remembering events seem genuine, or did it seem made up as an excuse to avoid answering questions? Did the witness seem to be reporting to you what he or she saw or heard, or simply putting together an account based on information obtained from other sources rather than personal observation? Did the witness's testimony seem reasonable and consistent as he or she gave it? Is it similar to or different from what other witnesses said about the same events? Did the witness say or do something different on an earlier occasion? Do any inconsistencies in the witness's evidence make the main points of the testimony more or less believable or reliable? Is the inconsistency about something important, or is it a minor detail? Does it seem like an honest mistake, or is it a deliberate lie? Is the inconsistency because the witness said something different or because he or she failed to mention something? Is there any explanation for it? Does the explanation make sense? What was the witness's manner when he or she testified? How did he or she appear to you? Do not jump to conclusions, however, based entirely on how a witness has testified. Looks can be deceiving. Giving evidence in a trial is not a common experience for many witnesses. People react and appear differently. Witnesses come from different backgrounds. They have different abilities, values, and life experiences. There are simply too many variables to make the manner in which a witness testifies the only or most important factor in your decision. These are only some of the factors that you might keep in mind when you go to the jury room to assess the credibility and to make your decision. These factors might help you decide how much or how little you will believe of and rely upon a witness's evidence. You may consider other factors as well. You bring your collective experience from your contact with people into the jury room. Simply use your good common sense in deciding these issues. When a witness says one thing in the witness box but has said something quite different on an earlier occasion, your common sense should tell you that the fact that the witness has given different versions may be important in deciding whether or how much you believe of the witness's testimony. The first thing for you to decide is whether the witness in fact gave an earlier and different version from his or her testimony of the same events. If you find that the witness gave an earlier version of events and you find that earlier version of events was different than his or her testimony, please listen carefully to what I tell you about how to use that version to help you decide this case. Not every difference or omission will be important. You should consider the fact, nature, and extent of any differences in deciding their importance and whether you believe or will rely on the witness's testimony. You should also consider any explanation the witness gives for the differences. When you are taking the differences into account, you can only use the testimony given under oath in this trial as evidence of what actually happened. You cannot use the earlier statements as evidence of what actually happened unless you are satisfied the witness accepted it as true while in the witness box. The evidence of the victim includes the videotaped statement. However, it would be dangerous to convict on the basis of the video evidence alone. It is the whole of the victim's evidence that you must consider. I will now provide you with a copy of the indictment, which contains the charges, and outline the law relating to them. You will see as I deal with these offenses that certain elements that must be proved are common. Simply, they relate to issues of identity, dates of the acts alleged by the Crown, and the nature of the allegation. For you to find the accused guilty of the first offense, you must find the Crown has proven the following essential elements beyond a reasonable doubt. First, the identity of the accused as the offender. Second, the time and place of the offense as set out in the indictment. Third, that the accused applied force to the victim. Fourth, that the accused intended to apply force to the victim. And fifth, that the victim did not consent to the application of force by the accused. I will now review the evidence as it relates to these three offenses and their elements of required proof. Some of the elements of the offenses are non-contentious. Although it is ultimately for you to decide, the evidence confirms that the accused is the person named in the charges and that the matters occurred at the location outlined in the indictment. It is for Crown Counsel to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that events alleged in fact occurred and that the accused was the person involved in them. It is not for the accused to prove that these events never happened. If you have a reasonable doubt whether the alleged events, which are the basis for the charges, ever took place, you must find the accused not guilty. You do not decide whether something happened simply by comparing one version of events with another and choosing one of them. You have to consider all the evidence and decide whether you have been satisfied beyond a reasonable doubt that the events that form the basis of each of the crimes charged in fact took place. If the evidence leaves you with a reasonable doubt about the accused's guilt or any essential element of an offense charged, you must find him not guilty of that offense. Well, that ends this little practice session. I'm trusting that things went well for you. Once again, I encourage you to look over your real time, make some dictionary entries, and time permitting, perhaps listen to the audio as you mark or proofread your real time to see exactly what's happening. Until next time, I'm signing off.